Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, which coaching moves surprised us? Which coaching moves do we think should not have happened? And are there moves still to be made? Charles Robinson joins me. Frank Schwab joins me. And Kirk Cousins joins me. Does he want to go back to Atlanta? Inside Coverage is next. All right, let's do a show. Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome to another edition, a Monday edition after Week 18 finally comes to an end as we get our wildcard weekend bracket, as we have all 14 teams set for the postseason of Inside Coverage here on Yahoo, the how, the why, any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. So back in the day, hi there, Charles Robinson, Frank Schwab, our senior NFL writers at Yahoo. Back in the day when I would host this show on NFL Network on Monday, the day after the season, for years we called it Black Monday, and I think that is still what people call it around the league. It is Black Monday. Coaches are getting fired. Buildings are getting cleaned out. It is not always a very happy day. There was a little bit of pushback. It might have come from 345 Park. It might have just been a big editorial decision that, hey, let's not make it about people getting fired. Let's make it about the playoffs. And we all said, right, but like the playoffs aren't until Saturday. Like, you know, the Rams and the Panthers and the Packers and the Bears, that's on Saturday. Like, we should talk about the news. And then we came to kind of like that middle ground, because you do realize that for 14 of the fan bases, it's actually a really good day, at least, you know, for most of the 14. And that for the places where they're looking for a new head coach, in which there are six buildings, obviously it's the start of a new offseason, but things are a bit different there. So we're going to try to find that balance. With that said, C. Rob, how the heck are you? How was your weekend?
I'm good. This is busy. There's a lot of stuff happening right now. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff happening right now today. So I'm hoping we can jet through this show, get everybody the information they need, and move on to the next piece of content to produce.
We will Frank, jet I'm through sure the show, and then I will get on a jet, Frank.
Yeah. There you go. Everybody's running and gunning.
I will say, Charles, I did think of you on Sunday night, because you said last week, I think in your one more thing on one of our shows, that this might be the greatest NFL season ever. And then I'm watching that banana Steelers Ravens ending and just thinking,
oh, my God,
he might be right. Like, we've had so many games like that, and it was just amazing. I'm sure we'll talk about it later. But yes, it was quite a fitting end to a really, really exciting regular season.
I'm not kidding. This is the season where I got like normalized to me, where I'm like, no, there's 50 seconds left. Like this, they could totally right. Go the other way. I'm like every game, like it's like
even when Tyler Loop was lining up for that field goal, I'm like, it's too clean. We're gonna have a block, or we're gonna have something weird happen, and he shanks it. But it's been wild,
and then it happened. And we're gonna preface this by saying everyone thinks I'm a Steeler hater. I don't know that it's entirely accurate. Maybe I just point out things, you know, their shortcomings more than others. Let's put it that way. But that horrible field at Acrisure, and it is a horrible field. It is a horrible, horrible field. I know they've worked on it. They've replaced the sod, but I was there week six, and players on both teams told me it was the worst field they had ever seen in their entire life. That field finally paid dividends. That field won a game for them. Shadobi Awuzie on field turf, or on a clean field, and I know it's week 18 in a snowy city, probably doesn't fall and give Calvin Austin a walk-in room service touchdown.
Oh, and they blessed it, too. Probably not. Right? Didn't they bless it?
No. I think there's the holy water. My fault. There's the holy water. That's what won the game.
What a great clip.
Yeah. I'm glad Tirico brought it up. Tirico called it an amazing game. Theater setting it up at the end. Tyler Loop, the man to replace Justin Tucker. He has the right wherewithal, the makeup to make this kick. And then this is after Chris Boswell had, you know, doinked his, which was stunning. Anyway, we'll get to the games in a second. Let's get to the coaching vacancies. As we sit here today, there are six NFL head coaching vacancies. You knew the Giants and the Titans. That was from before the season. We get the Falcons firing both coach Raheem Morris and GM Terry Fontenot Sunday night. The Browns this morning, and I am in Cleveland, fired head coach Kevin Stefanski. Andrew Berry, the GM, stays in Vegas. Pete Carroll is out. That happened on Monday morning as head coach of the Raiders, one and done. And then Jonathan Gannon, a day after his birthday, is fired after 3 years in Arizona and losing 14 out of his last 15 games. Obviously, there are a lot of questions, a lot of quarterback questions, probably with all these teams, maybe the Giants or the team. Titans as well with the most stable quarterback situation. Guys, let's start here with the Browns. I don't know that anyone is shocked that Kevin Stefanski is fired. At the same time, though, you sit back and say, could this have gone differently? Kevin Stefanski's first 4 years brought winning back to Cleveland, right? Two trips to the playoffs in 20 and in 23. He is a two-time NFL Coach of the Year. Heard Rex Ryan on the TV this morning say, who cares about Coach of the Year? Rex, it matters because both of those seasons, he coached his tail off to get this team into the postseason. But Kevin Stefanski, the last 2 years, has won only 8 games. And the message today from owner Jimmy Haslam was, and mind you, Haslam said before the season that this was a year in transition, paraphrasing here, but that at the same time, 3 wins wouldn't be good enough. They won 5 games with wins over division opponents Pittsburgh and Cincinnati to close out the season in week 17 and 18. But the message, Charles, from Andrew Berry on the podium today and from Jimmy Haslam, the owner, was that there is more talent here. This team probably should have won more games and that there wasn't enough development here. They love the defense. Sounds like Jim Schwartz and the defensive staff is staying. But see, Rob, they need a new head coach.
Well, yeah, let's see if they're staying. I mean, that's a little odd, you know, for that to kind of, you get that feeling you don't have a head coach right now. Yeah, I mean, it's the message today, but so you're already stepping over a head coach, unless it's going to come from you know, that side of the ball. Are you going to elevate Jim Schwartz? I mean, you're already telling the next head coach coming in, hey, we're going to name half of your assistant coaches. Okay, not a great way to start. But I look at this situation and Andrew Berry, I understand retaining Andrew Berry. I mean, he had a very successful draft class. I think there is talent on this roster. There are problems that, you know, he has to continue to try and fix. I think this, for me personally, all goes back to, in terms of Kevin Stefanski, Deshaun Watson not working out. Like, there are so many different things we could turn back to. What if Baker Mayfield never injures his shoulder? What if the Deshaun Watson contract wasn't fully guaranteed, as I think some people in that building did not want it to be fully guaranteed, just to backstop, you know, the possibility that it ultimately didn't work out. I think this came down to the feeling that you needed maybe a different voice there. Obviously, they talked about the development. Quarterback's going to be a big deal. I think at times the offense was flat. Maybe the play calling didn't always make sense. But I also think back to when Joe Flacco was traded. And I thought then, this is the first time I've ever felt any kind of distance between Kevin Stefanski and maybe what he wanted to do moving forward and what the organization did with the roster and a quarterback. And I kind of felt like that's when I first saw a little bit of a schism that was happening there. And I thought Kevin, it felt to me like he was just miserable as the season went on. It was such a miserable experience, I think, trying to coach this team week in, week out with the multitude of things that were going on. I'm not going to bring up names and go back into all that, but this does not surprise me at all.
It surprises me, to be honest, because I just wonder what the goal is here. Is it just to react to a losing season and appease some of your fans? Okay, that's fine. Are you going to get a better coach than Kevin Stefanski? I think so few NFL teams actually ask themselves this question. Bad NFL teams, anyway. Are we going to get a better coach than the one we're firing? I think in the Browns' case, the answer is definitively no. Like, maybe hit the lottery on somebody. But I don't think Kevin Stefanski was the problem here. Yes, Coach of the Year is a broken award, but he's won 2 of them. He did a good coaching job. Was it all of a sudden he couldn't coach anymore? Or was it that you gave him Joe Flacco, Dylan Gabriel, and Shedeur Sanders to start the season with a bunch of rookies playing? You talk about no development. Well, Andrew, you pointed it out yesterday on Twitter that the Browns became the first team to have rookies lead in passing yards, rushing yards, receiving yards, and tackles in a season since the merger. I thought those rookies played pretty well. I don't think Stefanski was a problem. I just don't. I don't look at the Cleveland Browns and say, well, that should have been an 11-win team with a better coach. Like, how could you possibly think that? So I just, it's a, look, I don't think any any candidate with a lot of options looks at the Browns and says, oh, the GM's not going, so, well, I'm going to be working for maybe a lame duck GM, and the ownership is still bad, and this organization has really no positive history whatsoever in the past 25 years. Yeah, that's number one on my priority list. So I don't think they're getting the best candidate out there. I think Kevin Stefanski immediately becoming the hottest name in this coaching cycle tells you all you need to know. This was not a Kevin Stefanski problem, and the Browns just reacted. Well, we lost 11 games, got to fire the coach. I don't think you're getting any better for it. So what's the point?
Andrew, here's something I'll pose to Andrew, because Andrew's been in that building more than any of us have, right? I went into Tennessee, you know, and I saw this happen with Mike Vrabel, frankly. I did. I remember the fan base wanted him fired. Ownership felt like, hey, there's a disconnect here. Mike's simply not working here. And so they moved on from Mike Vrabel. And I remember thinking at that time, they're going to regret this eventually. He's going to get another job somewhere. It's going to work. He's a good coach. He's shown in the past he's a good coach. And they're going to watch him succeed on some other horizon. And you're going to hear the fans complaining again. What did we do? Why did we let that guy go? Well, maybe it was other things in the building that were broken. Maybe it's ownership. That's the problem. I kind of feel like this is what we're setting up to see. It feels so familiar to me when I look back at what happened with the Tennessee Titans and Mike Vrabel, and I would not be surprised to see Kevin Stefanski go elsewhere and succeed. And even though ultimately Andrew Berry was part of this decision, I do think Andrew Berry believes in Kevin Stefanski as a head coach, but I think he also, you arrive to a point where there's a consensus inside the building that maybe things need to change.
So it's, I'm glad you brought up, you know, my experience with the Browns. So for those who don't know, I am the radio play-by-play voice of the Cleveland Browns. So I'm walking a fine line here, and I appreciate everyone understanding that as I give you things how I've seen it. You're right. You're both right. Kevin Stefanski is a very good head coach, and the people here in Cleveland know that. The players know that. Joel Bitonio knows that. Grant Delpit knows that. And while there is this idea that, oh, they're changing coaches every year, no, they're not. He's been here for 6 years. A player like Grant Delpit, a Pro Bowl alternate this year. He could and should have been a Pro Bowl starter. He's never gone through a coaching change, even though the outside, you know, the snark is always, oh, the Browns are a mess. He's never gone through a coaching change. He has been here for 6 years. Joel Bitonio's future, as he weighs it, does he come back for a 13th season? He started 178 games as a Cleveland Brown. He got emotional today on the podium. He teared up a little bit when he was asked, if this is it, how do you want the fans to remember you? He, and Joel said this, has sat in leadership meetings every week for 6 years with Kevin Stefanski, and I would say that 99% of the players, or whatever high number that begins with a 9, will tell you they love the guy. On a personal level, and Andrew Berry said this today, said it on the podium and said it to me off the air as well, that he considers Kevin family. His kids consider Kevin family. I can tell a story. I don't think that I've ever said this on air, but when I left NFL Network in 2023, I had done a few games for the Browns, and certainly I knew Kevin from like owners meetings and things, but I didn't have his phone number. I'm having lunch the day that I left NFL Network, and it hit the media and everyone's blowing up your phone. Oh my God, what's going on? And I get a missed call from a Minneapolis phone number. I'm like, spam. I let it go to voicemail. I'm driving home and I listen to the voicemail. And it's Kevin. He had sought out my phone number. He asked somebody, hey, give me Andrew's number, and left me this long voicemail about, hey, you know what? You're better than this. You're going to rise above this. Whatever. So, you know what? I kind of feel the same way. I want to say better than this, meaning he's still a good coach. He's going to go somewhere and coach again. And if you want to look at the other openings here, like I'm going to say it right now, there's a very good chance that the Browns face Kevin Stefanski next year, because the Browns play the Giants next year. They play the Titans next year. They play the Falcons next year, and they play the Raiders next year. So there's a chance they face him next year. And you know what? When they do, they're going to give him a big hug. Everybody will. They think, the Browns think, and Jimmy Haslam said this today, that you find the right coach, put a little fire back in this building, that you get another great draft. And Andrew Berry was on the podium today, and he will tell you this very much in part because of this last draft, because of all those rookies. Hit a grand slam. You got to go back and hit another grand slam to restock this roster, because right now there are three offensive linemen under contract for next year, and two of them are recovering from major injuries. Two of the three. So You need to redo that and fix that. And same with wide receiver. Got to get some more weapons here as well. They think when you look at the way teams go, and three teams went worst to first last year, that the defense is good enough where if you could figure out the offensive side, they could do the same. And only time will tell if they can.
Yeah. Well, it's again, I'm trying to be careful here because I have, you know, relationships in the building as well. But it definitely feels like a little bit of a merry-go-round, you know, in some respects. But as you said, and you pointed this out, and people should remember this, it's not a, hey, they're firing the guy every year. He had a run there, right? Had some success.
It's 6 years. And the first 4 years were 37-30 and two trips to the playoffs.
Yeah. We'll see. I'll be very curious to see who wants to go in.
I don't see how, and I just don't see how anyone in the Browns office, in their front office and their building, any Browns fans even can look and say, well, this team would be much better without Kevin Stefanski. What? Like, okay, so he, yeah,
well, there's a lot of fans. Like, a lot of fans do believe that.
Well, yeah, but fans, I mean, look, fans. If you listen to the fans,
you go sit with them. What's the old adage? Yeah, but a lot of fans do believe that. For better or for worse, they're fans. Fine, but they have the right to believe
that. They don't know what they're talking about. Stefanski, again, the fact that he is the hottest name right now in this coaching cycle tells you everything you need to know. That the Browns are probably, if the Browns wanted to hire the best coach available right now, they'd hire Kevin Stefanski. Like, it's ridiculous to me. It doesn't make any logical sense why you would make this move.
All right, let's get to Pete Carroll here, because this one was no surprise. Had someone joke with me a couple of days ago that, you know, Pete Carroll will likely be fired by whatever time Mark Davis wakes up on Monday morning. Surprised it didn't happen on Sunday night. I think the NFL is a better place with Pete Carroll. I told that to Pete when I saw him last year. I love the guy. He used to host the Pete Carroll show his final year when he was at USC on 710 ESPN in Los Angeles. It just didn't work. He didn't have a quarterback. And they couldn't score points and they couldn't run the football, even though Ashton Jeanty in the end, you know, has his 1,000-yard season and he put together something, at least, you know, you could put the stats on paper. But this team never figured out the offense. They paid Chip Kelly $6 million, then they fired him midseason. Special teams were a mess. The defense was what it was. Patrick Graham has survived all these different head coaches. But now, with John Spytek staying, so much like in Cleveland, the GM is staying, much like in New York, the GM is staying. We've seen that. Arizona, Monty Austinfort, the GM, is staying. The Raiders got to go find a new head coach. But, hey, Charles, at least they have the number one overall pick. They won, and they didn't screw that up because the Giants won as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's an attractive asset, at least for the next head coach in there. But it's an attractive asset in an unattractive situation just in terms of the track record, right? You sit there and you look at this and you go, how many times are they going to do this? And I think stepping back and looking at it now, it reminds me a little bit of when Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler went into the Raiders. And there was this mindset of, hey, they spent money. We think we can get this on the rails fast. Let's go for it. And after 1 year, both Josh McDaniels and Kevin Ziegler realized, no, this is not going to work. It's going to have to be a rebuild. This, you know, so we're going to have to make a hard left turn here. I think a little bit of that happened with the Raiders. They went and they got Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll's mentality was, come in, let's win now. We go and we get the veteran quarterback who I trust. Tom Brady trusted Pete Carroll. But you added Chip Kelly to that mix. Felt awkward from the start. The coaching staff never really felt like it was all on the same page. I had people, you know, familiar, you know, talking to Tom, they're telling me like, hey, everybody there's kind of on a different page, you know, ownership's on this page, Tom's on this page, the coaching staff's on this page. And it does not feel like this is coming together. Instead, it feels like it's coming apart. And I think when you get to the end of the season, you realize Pete's not in it for a rebuild. I think they wanted to be respectful about it. I think that's why Pete didn't get fired on Sunday night. It was like, let's just go ahead and we'll have this go into Monday and just not lop it off immediately, but it's a rebuild. And it's going to be very much, I think, a far more involved, at least I think, Tom Brady in the building. That's the one question here that I think hangs over this is, how can Tom Brady be more involved and understand what's going on in that building if he's not walking the halls more regularly? He doesn't live there, right? He has a whole other job that takes up a ton of his time and bandwidth. and he's just not in the organization day in and day out. And that's really how you fix an organization from the inside out. Now he's got Alex Guerrero there watching, listening. I'm not sure how much Alex can really know if people know that that's Tom's guy. So that's my question.
People know.
Yeah, they know. They absolutely know it's his guy. So I mean, but if that's your conduit, if you're Tom, right? If you're Tom Brady, and that's your conduit into knowing what's going on in the organization because you're not there every day, but people inside the organization know that's the conduit. You know, what are you going to feed? You're not feeding everything to Alex so that Alex knows every single little thing that's going on, all the little, you know, microbial problems that turn into bigger things. That's just my question. Is Tom going to be there on a more consistent basis to the point where he's rolling up his sleeves and he's part of the day to day, which I think is how it gets fixed from a Tom Brady standpoint. I don't know that he can do it otherwise.
Yeah. And I mean, he's got that $330 million job he doesn't want to walk away from, right? Like, it's totally correct on that. By the way, real quick on Pete Carroll, I have a ton of respect for Pete. He has a resume that puts him in line to maybe make the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the College Football Hall of Fame. Like, he's been a tremendous coach throughout his life, but this was always a bad fit. It just made no sense to me. Why do you hire the oldest coach in NFL history to what, be a really feisty fourth place team in the AFC West? Like, that was always their ceiling of, I guess not that the Chiefs fell apart because of injuries, but they were never going to be a playoff contender. So what was the point of all this? I never understood it. Fine, you dump it, you start over again. But the Brady part of this is the most interesting thing because, like you said, Charles, he's kind of a part-timer there. And there's no proof of concept that Tom Brady knows how to conduct a coaching search. He was a great quarterback. This is a completely different job. Like, I don't know, other than he's a big name and Mark Davis loves big names, he went out of his way. The Raiders went out of their way today to mention that Tom Brady's going to be part of the search. Why? Mm-hmm. So Mark Davis could sit back and say, ha, yeah, Tom Brady, that's my guy. Tom Brady's won a lot of games as a quarterback, and he's a great football mind and all that. But he is a part-time guy who, like you said, doesn't seem totally invested. But what is he? He's a big name. Like, that's all that he seems to bring to the table right now. We'll see. Like, we'll see if him and Spytek could collaborate on this and come up with a grand slam hire as a coach, especially with the first pick coming in. But there's no proof Tom Brady's good at this job. Like, there's no, like, this is the guy who's going to, okay, maybe.
But what actually
especially
is
when
the
he's
job?
Out there all the time. That yeah, is the, like, I don't, I just, I don't know why, like, this fascination with the Raiders and Tom Brady being involved with everything. Like, there's no proof that he could do this. Maybe, again, he's really, really smart dude, and he's great, great football life and career and all that. But it's just, the whole situation with Brady is just weird to me.
Well, Frank, and one thing I think is concerning too is Chip Kelly straight up said, part of the reason I came here, Tom Brady led the interview. To me, when he was talking about who represented ownership at that table, when Chip Kelly's going through his process, it was Brady. He pointed at Brady as being a guy that was a very, very strong underlying reason for him taking that job. Okay, well, that didn't work. And it did not work almost instantaneously. Like, there were problems inside that coaching staff in terms of how they wanted to run things, in terms of, you know, Pete and Chip and functionally how they were moving forward with the offense. Look, there were issues from the start. So that already tells you, okay, there was a mistake made. And if Chip's telling the truth, Tom was part of it, right? So where do we go from here? The Raiders are, I feel like they're devolving into the ownership that can screw up a bread sandwich. It's just like every year we're looking at the situation and going, okay, now what?
Exactly, yeah.
There's a bread sandwich.
That was a great line, by the way. But yes, that's why I wondered when, you know, I had to do the rankings today of all the openings. And I was like, why would anybody really take this Raiders job? They're up there because a lot of their openings
the
are pretty bad.
Number one pick.
They got the number one pick. And they got Bob Powers.
But the roster needs a lot of help.
But the roster needs a lot of help. And this is just a rudderless organization. It's an absolute
trade Max Crosby.
There's no plan. They traded for a 35-year-old quarterback when they had no chance of not being the last place team in the AFC West. Like, what are we doing here? Like, there's just no, I don't see any realistic expectation that the Raiders are going to be anything but a laughing stock for a long, long time. Unless they just absolutely nail the first pick of the draft and absolutely nail the head coaching. They have to now. They have to.
I'll tell you what we're doing here, and we're going to go to Atlanta coming up next. We're going to talk to Kirk Cousins, the once and maybe future Falcons quarterback. And there is another old quarterback, former quarterback, not Tom Brady, but Matt Ryan, who also does TV, who might have some say in things in Atlanta coming up. We'll ask Kirk Cousins what he thinks of that on Inside Coverage on Yahoo. What an interesting season it was for this guy. That's why we are thrilled on a Monday here on Inside Coverage that Kirk Cousins, quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons, is joining us. Kirk, how are you, man? Good to see you.
Yeah, doing well, as well as you can be when you don't make the playoffs. But yeah, hanging in there.
So help me unpack, because I would have to think that the day after you sit back and maybe take a deep breath and reflect on the journey. It was quite a journey. You weren't the starter, then you were the starter, then you're lighting it up on Monday night, and then, you know, the crazy thing about the three-way tie on Sunday, and then obviously coach and GM get let go Sunday night. Have you had a chance to kind of unpack all of it?
Yeah, I don't know that I have yet. I think it's just another reminder of how wild pro football can be. I've lived it so many times. I mean, I think going back a little over 2 years ago when I tore my Achilles to now, there's been a lot of curveballs and a lot of change, and that just kind of continues. And it just feels like, you know, I was told a long time ago in pro football, you got to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I'm reminded of that time and again. But so here we are again, you know, at the end of a season, and kind of looking forward, not knowing what's next, but just kind of taking it one day at a time, and we'll see where it leads.
So the big Monday night win last week, a lot of people thought that was Raheem Morris's statement. Obviously, it wasn't enough. But I also thought, Kirk, that game, and maybe the Bucs game as well a few weeks prior, those games were your statement. Do you think you made a statement the final month of this season that I should be a guy, whether it's in Atlanta or somewhere else in 2026?
Well, you know, I think it may not be for me to say. It's probably more for, you know, the decision makers of teams. They can make those calls as they go evaluate tape and study what they want to do. But I think to have the opportunity, you know, these last few weeks to go out there and play and to do the best you can, put your best foot forward, I was fortunate to have that opportunity. And then you just kind of know that the hay's in the barn as far as our work is concerned. And now we've got to let it go to the decision makers in the spring as to what they want to do. But was grateful to have that opportunity to go out and play and be with your teammates and try to win as many as you can and have success.
But you have no doubt that you can still do this. You want to keep playing, right? You're going to go till the wheels come off.
Yeah, I'd like to keep playing, but we'll see kind of the right opportunity can present itself.
How are you and Matt Ryan? I looked it up, by the way. I don't know if you remember this. Very first time you ever came off the bench as a rookie, Matt Ryan was the other quarterback.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, Matt, that was exactly right. I think it was week five. Griff got a concussion. I went in. We scored a touchdown on the first drive or second drive, but didn't play too great after that, ended up losing. But we've had some good battles over the years. And so, you know, he and I, from a distance, you know, have kind of gotten to know each other a little bit.
But no conversations, obviously, as of yet?
No, I haven't talked to Matt since I probably saw him during training camp.
If Arthur Blank came to you and said, hey, Kirk, what would you like to see in a new head coach? What would you tell him?
Well, I'd tell him, Mr. Blank, I don't know if it's my call or mine to say. You know, I think that that's what, you know, he and the decision makers he puts in place will have to make that call. But, you know, certainly you just want a really, in the simplest terms, a leader of men. And when you get that, you know, usually, you know, the rest of the things kind of sort themselves out.
Kirk, you're doing this today on behalf of Great Clips. I promise we're going to get to that. But you and I were talking off the air about Myles Garrett and the Browns. And you are, and let's go back to actually 2012, one of the few people that has gone through what the Browns went through. And that is a situation where you have a rookie backing up a rookie. RG3 was the starter. You also came in that draft class as well. That's, Rex Grossman was there, not to take away from Rex. But he was inactive most weeks. He was a rookie backing up a rookie. What is that like? And I know you were focused on the Falcons, but watching from afar, could you at all flash back or try to imagine what Dillon Gabriel and Shador were going through?
Yeah, I could say it's a little bit of a flashback. I remember the day I was drafted, my agent told me you'll be inactive all season because they will not go rookie backing up a rookie. That just wouldn't happen. And then Mike Shanahan had enough belief in me as a player where he said, even though this is very unconventional, I'm going to do this anyways. And looking back, I mean, that kind of shows Mike Shanahan and kind of his willingness to do what he feels is right, regardless of if it's, you know, the conventional thing. But I'm just so fortunate for having been coached by the people I was with in Washington and the development that took place. And I mean, it's so important when you're a young quarterback to be around the right coaching, to be around the right system. And so when you get that at a young age, it helps and changes your whole, you know, trajectory and development. And similar to Griff and I, you know, both those rookies got in and played meaningful snaps their rookie year. And you never know which way it goes, but anytime you can get out there and get that game experience, it makes a difference in your development.
Kirk, we appreciate your time. Best of luck, whatever the offseason brings, and can't wait to see where you land and where you're slinging it in 2026.
For sure. Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate you having me on.
It's Inside Coverage here on Yahoo, doing this on a Monday. Andrew Siciliano, Charles Robinson, and Frank Schwab. Yes, we have a playoff bracket. I have it right here in my hand. We'll get to the playoffs coming up shortly. Just heard from Kirk Cousins. His very first game as an NFL player when he came off the bench was against Matt Ryan. Now he might actually be working for Matt Ryan. That remains to be seen. But what we do know, C-Rob, is that the Falcons were the first team to, on Sunday night, hit send on their press release. And it was both head coach Raheem Morris, who made a run there at the end with the four straight wins, and general manager Terry Fontenot as well. Also notable, Rich McKay, after 23 years, and he's worn various hats around that organization and really the sports empire for Arthur Blank there in Atlanta. Rich McKay is transitioning out as well. How do you read the Falcons here on Monday?
Well, first off, I think there's no doubt the decision was made before the final game. It was Arthur Blank knew he was going to make wholesale change there. You know, Rich McKay, who's been there for a long time, as you said, worn a number of hats, now transitioning over to essentially, he's going to be part of Arthur Blank's larger business empire rather than part of the football operation. And it sounds like Matt Ryan is the guy, the leader in the clubhouse right now for what I would term sort of a football czar position, the head coach. The next general manager, they're going to report to whoever this individual is. And it sounds like it's going to be Matt Ryan. I know there's a lot of respect from ownership for him, what he brings to the table from a football aptitude standpoint, obviously what he's done in the organization as well. And not only that, I think they feel like there's a lot of runway. This is a guy who could hold this position potentially for decades if he does it well for the Atlanta Falcons. You know, what I think ultimately doomed this, Raheem Morris, Arthur Blank, had a lot of affection for Raheem Morris. Really, you know, there was a closeness there that was real. It's the same with, you know, Rich McKay and Raheem Morris. But I think when the quarterback, you know, situation developed, when you go out and you sign a Kirk Cousins and then you draft a Michael Penix and you layer those two on top of each other, you're threading a needle with the world's smallest hole. Like, you're going to screw this up, right? There's almost no way this could have gone well. And it happened almost immediately when Kirk effectively came out through his representation and said, felt a little misled there. Like, it didn't really know that this was going to happen. And where does this now put me? It wasn't a good track. And Kirk obviously had, you know, some physical issues. And then Michael Penix suffers a knee injury when we've seen Michael Penix suffer injuries in college. So there was that entire gamble on a Michael Penix. I just think the devolvement that occurred at quarterback and really ultimately undermined the team was something that really bothered Arthur Blank. And I think he wanted new leadership, but also leadership that was going to oversee everything. He wants his own point man, and he wants the general manager, and he wants the head coach to report to that person. So he's siloing, I think, in some ways, the responsibilities and the voices that he was hearing.
I actually agreed with this move a lot. And because I sat back late in the season and said, they're just going to say, oh, well, you beat the Rams, you got to keep Raheem Morris around. And it would make me more frustrated, because it's like, you watch them play the Rams, you watch them in this 4-game winning streak late in the season, and you say, how on earth is this team under 500? they made it be, let it be known draft day when they traded a future first round pick to go and get Michael Pierce that we can win now. And they couldn't win the worst division in the NFL. So I thought it was perfectly reasonable for them to say, yep, we won four games at the end of the season, but we don't care. Raheem's not the right guy for this job. We could do better. And they cleaned it out too. I think they're the only of the six. I off the top of my head, the only of the six that are doing GM and coach. I might be wrong about that, but mm-hmm. I think that's the way you got to do it too. Like I just keeping around a GM who's probably a lame duck if you have a losing season, that doesn't work out very often. The new era, as we've talked about on this show and elsewhere for the last few years, is bringing the coach and GM together. They're a team, they're in sync. And I think they're doing that in Atlanta. I think this is the most attractive opening of all the jobs. Yes, there's a quarterback questions, but everything other than that is pretty stable, and you still have the worst.
Why is it the most attractive?
Because I think the roster is very, very good. I think coming in with your GM is a major thing here. I don't think you're not stuck with Joe mm-hmm. Shane, where if the Giants go 4-13 again, Joe Shane's getting fired. Now what? I think
well,
coming in as a team
Frank?
With a GM.
Well, Frank, what about quarterback?
The quarterback is
you,
an
you
issue.
Just said, are you think, sold on Penix?
No, I'm not. I am not sold on Penix. I'm not sold on Cousins at 38 either. And that could sink this, but everything around the quarterback position, I think, is in good shape. I really do. You looked at that roster, you watched them play late in the season, and you said, this is a playoff level team. Like, there's no way this team should be 8-9. You watched them play against the Rams. He said, this team is not necessarily on the Rams level, but they're pretty darn good. Now, the quarterback position is a problem, and that does trip up a lot of coaches, and maybe some candidates say, I don't want to go into the unknown with Michael Penix dealing with another ACL
injury.
And
you don't have a first.
I get that. And you don't have
first.
A first.
You don't have a first round pick.
But don't you guys
right.
agree
you
that everything
your first
else,
for James Pierce?
Let's say we remove the quarterback. And I know that's tough. But everything else is good, right?
There's no quarterback.
Like, yeah, I know.
But this is, but the
you.
Rest
I do
of the situation
you. There is
very
a young
good.
Core there. Yes.
The young core is very good. I think ownership is probably the best of the six. If you were talking about ranking which owner you want to play for, it's, again, a really, really easy division. I just think there's going to be an attractive job opening to somebody. And then, yes, the quarterback situation will need to get figured out, whether it's Penix or Cousins or Bridge or whatever it is. But everything else is in pretty good shape in Atlanta for whoever comes in and gets that job.
I want to make clear, I am fighting with Frank.
You are fighting with Frank. Yeah,
you are, but I am.
And Cousins there made it clear that he does want to play. He's like, he's going to keep playing. He thought he proved it here down the stretch. He can still play. If it's Atlanta, it's Atlanta. If it isn't, it isn't. But I do agree. I mean, I think he made a statement in the last couple of games that, yeah, like I can still do this. I mean, the past is the past, but here, you give me a month, I could throw it around a little bit. You have the game against the Buccaneers. Obviously, you have the Rams game as well. A lot of that was Bijan, but Kirk Cousins still can sling it a little bit. Whether or not he's going to be a full-time starter next year, I do not know, but it's going to be a fascinating quarterback offseason as well. There are only 32 of these jobs, and you need more than one to go deep, generally speaking, because rarely do you only need one. The Falcons, an example this year of that. There is also a quarterback conversation to be had in Arizona, where the Falcons, or rather the Cardinals, not only need a new head coach, they fired Jonathan Gannon today after 3 years. They kept the GM, Monty Austin, for it. But, Charles, there is a legitimate quarterback question here as well. And the Cardinals sat down. Kyler Murray had an injury, but there are people skeptical, let's just say that, skeptical of whether or not season-ending IR was truly necessary for Kyler Murray. They could get out of the contract, but there's going to be a significant cap hit if they choose to do so. It is another head coaching vacancy, however, in which if I'm a candidate and I sit across from Michael Bidwill, and from Monty Austin Ford. By the way, it is Bidwill, not Bidwell, everybody on TV that screws that up. I'm going to ask, am I playing Kyler Murray? Is that part of this deal?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's if you ask me what really probably undermined this, if you went back to the start, what was the biggest problem that lingered all the way through? It was Kyler Murray, right? And I think Jonathan Gannon went in, and Jonathan Gannon coaches guys hard, right? There were players in that organization, I remember going in shortly after they had gotten there, and they're like, hey man, the country club is up. Like, Cliff Kingsbury, that whole thing's gone. Like, we are, a lot of stuff's getting thrown out. There's some expectations here. Jonathan Gannon will get in your face. He's going to coach you hard. It's going to rub some guys the wrong way, but you know, the thought process is, all right, we'll do a studs up rebuild. They got rid of a bunch of guys they felt didn't fix the culture. And they actually got, I think it was like week 10, week 11 in 2024, they're winning the NFC West. They're at the top, right? And then they lose four games after that, and it sinks again. And once again, I think, you know, some of that gets tied back to the quarterback. And I think right around that time, I felt like Jonathan Gannon's like, I'm going to keep towing the line here and saying what I have to say about Kyler, and he's showing up and I'm putting expectations on him, but I don't know that ultimately we can turn it around with this guy. But he had the deal. They had to continue to move forward with Murray. I think the change happens because you go from 8-9 this year. There's a ton of expectations. You invest heavily in the defense. You don't really put anything into the offense, and the defense really flops. There's a ton of injuries. I think they had, you know, 40 plus players, like 42, 43 players who missed games this year. There are a lot of different excuses, but at the end of the day, it really just didn't come together for Jonathan Gannon. He's going to be a defensive coordinator somewhere. I think some of these new coaching hires will probably call Jonathan Gannon and say, hey, you want to be a DC? He might get another shot at a head coaching job someday. I think he's a quality coach. I really do. But this did develop into a bad situation. It was not all tied to the talent on the roster, which is why Monty Austin-Fort is still there. And also, I just want to speak real quick to what Frank said earlier about the idea of bringing in the coach and the general manager together. I do feel like there is still a mindset amongst owners to give GMs two coaches. Okay, you came in with this guy. It ultimately didn't work. As long as we see you can draft players and you can navigate adding wealth to the roster and the depth chart, we'll give you another coach. That's why I think Monty Austin-Fort is still in Arizona, because there is talent certainly on that roster.
Is there, though? Like, I don't know. Look at this Cardinals team, and Frank. I don't – how many blue chip guys have they got? Their best players are a tight end and a safety.
Pretty good.
Yep.
Michael Wilson. Looks like he's kind of
Michael
turned
Wilson's
a corner.
A good player.
Pretty good player.
Sure. I think Marvin Harrison.
Sure. Yeah. Now, you know what I would do, honestly? GM on some other team, I would call him Monty Austin-Fort and say, hey, I'll flip you a three and a conditional six. Like, we'll take Marvin Harrison. Are you frustrated? It hasn't worked. Like, we'll help you rebuild your war chest. That's just me.
I just don't see the talent
on the roster. I don't think the roster is that good. Again, your
defense
best players
has a lot of first round picks on it. Yeah,
it does.
There's a lot of first round picks invested in the defense, especially the front
play. And on top of that, you have no history in that franchise. That franchise has been bad forever. And again, you're coming in with a GM. You know that's not your guy. Like, so, and Monty Austin-Fort, if they lose again next season, why bring him back? I don't see what the Arizona Cardinals sell. I don't think there's a very good team. I don't think they're in a very good foundation. I don't think their roster. You guys think their roster is much better than I do. I think it's below average at best.
Rob thinks it's better than me.
Yeah, they lost 14 of 15 games. It wasn't all injuries. And the Kyler question is massive. If you guys want to get on me for like, how could you take the Falcons job because they got no QB? I don't know what's worse, Kyler coming back or Kyler not being there and having nobody. Like, it's an absolute mess at quarterback of all things. And it's not like they just have a ton of guys who are going to carry the franchise around the quarterback. I think this is an awful, awful job opening. I wouldn't want it if I was a candidate who had other options. They're going to hire somebody decent because they're one of 32, but I don't really see the bright side in any of this. I don't see why a candidate with other options would say, Cardinals, I see the bright side there. I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I just think this is miserable. I think they're in for, it's still a few years of a rebuild here, because with the Cardinals, I don't think they're close whatsoever.
And look, I really don't want to agree with Frank here. I'm struggling. I'm like, I actually have a decent point that aligns with that, and I don't want to say it. So I'm like, just don't say it, because even though it's a good point, it'll just, you're agreeing with Frank and it feels awful.
We have 2 minutes left in this segment.
Okay.
If you would like to make your great point, I'll just say Kyler Murray is $79 million in cash over the next 2 years, 46 coming up this year. Go.
And by the way, hey, come on into this division with Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, and Mike McDonald.
Sure.
Let's do that. NFC West, your best player is a tight end.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
That is a difficult sell, certainly, stepping into that division with those coaches and the way those organizations are aligned. So, yeah, I do agree with Frank from that standpoint. I don't think it's an all-star roster, just to be clear. But I do think there is talent there. And by the way, you didn't sell off next year's first-round asset. You can draft a quarterback and start fresh.
Yeah, and if memory serves, they're picking four coming up in the draft, so they are going to be in a prime position. Maybe not in a position to get a quarterback. Maybe not. I mean, it depends how many quarterbacks come out. We don't know who's going to come out. Technically, Mendoza can go back. Dante Moore can certainly go back. Which of these quarterbacks is going to come out? The Raiders are picking one. You would think that the Raiders stay and pick whichever quarterback that they like first. But are the Cardinals in a draft a quarterback now position? I don't know. Are the Giants totally sold on Jackson Dart? I think so. And the Giants made the announcement today that Joe Shane is going to stay as GM. So they need a new head coach, but not a new GM there in New York. But look, the draft is a long, long, long way away. But the Cardinals are one of those teams. You have to look at it as well. What are you going to get for Kyler Murray if you trade him? Tua's going to be out there. Tua was asked today in Miami if he would like a fresh start. And he said, yeah. Now, could that fresh start be with just a new head coach there? Mike McDaniel seemingly is not going anywhere, or does that mean ship him elsewhere and somehow navigate that cap hit and let Tua be? But add the names Kyler Murray and Tua Tagovailoa to your off-season quarterback carousel along with Kirk Cousins, because those are veteran names where GMs around the league are going, all right, with my coach and my system, can I get a different result here? We've seen each of those guys play well, different ages, obviously, different styles, but can we get something out of it here? Winnable. Can we do that? Kyler Murray, Tua, and Kirk Cousins. All right. Coming up next year on Inside Coverage of the Monday after the regular season ends, it is not ending in Cincinnati for Zach Taylor and Duke Tobin. I was actually in Cincinnati Sunday. I'll tell you what I saw. We'll tell you what Mike Brown said as well today. And more of the Giants in the rest of Week 18. Inside Coverage. It's Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. Andrew Siciliano and Charles Robinson and Frank Schwab. I was at a game Sunday, guys. I saw the Browns beat the Bengals 20-18. Myles Garrett gets sacked 23. Everybody is happy. I thought it was a very cool moment. I'll be honest with you. I thought there was a moment there late in the game where it was not going to happen. But, you know, the fact that the Bengals needed to drive down the field and throw the ball and actually try to rally and win the game. And the fact that both Denzel Ward and Tyson Campbell left the game, meaning Joe Burrow had to throw, started picking on some guys that came off the bench to play corner. And Myles Garrett eventually got the sack. It's one of the greatest single season defensive efforts that I think we've seen in a long, long time. Not just because there is a new sack record at 23, but because he's only the second player in NFL history to get 30 or more TFLs, tackles for a loss. The other being J.J. Watt. In one of his fantastic seasons, his second NFL season in 2012. The Bengals, however, were kind of angry afterwards. They didn't like the fact that the game was stopped as the Browns celebrated, and clearly they were ticked off afterwards because they lost. They lost, and there's an uncertain future there. But it is a future, Frank, we'll start with you on this one, that will include Zach Taylor and head of personnel, in essence GM, Duke Tobin. Mike Brown hit send on that announcement today. They are not going to blow it up. What do you think?
Not a huge fan of it. That one Super Bowl trip is doing a lot of heavy lifting for Zach Taylor. So is the fact that Mike Brown doesn't want to pay another coach who's not working for him, I think. But you missed the playoffs three straight years in Burrow's prime, and I don't know how you just run it back. And that's what they did after missing the playoffs in 2024. They just said, well, okay, we'll re-sign Higgins, we'll sign Chase to an extension, we'll bring everybody back, and it'll be better. And it wasn't. And you could say, well, Burrow's injuries. Well, the fact that they can't protect Burrow has led to a lot of those injuries. So they have a lot of work to do. Now, they have a lot of cap room. They do. They're actually more than you think. They have the seventh most cap room in the NFL as we sit here today. That'll change a lot. But they still have enough cap room to fix some things. But they have to fix everything. Like they have to fix the offensive line. They have to fix the entire defense. And I don't know why you expect different results next year. It's just, well, Joe stays healthy all year. Well, then Joe is the guy. Joe's the guy you want to keep around, which they obviously will if they can. And maybe it's not the coach. If it's just, hey, Joe Burrow being healthy, he'll fix everything. Well, maybe that just says something about Joe Burrow and not Zach Taylor. So it's fine. Whatever. I think Zach Taylor has done some good things. Maybe deserved another year just to see what they can do if Burrow stays healthy. But I just look at the decay around Joe Burrow and missing the playoffs three times in a row in his prime. And I'm like, why? What's really the point in running this back?
I think it's, let's see what this looks like if we can just get a fully healthy season out of Burrow. It's really hard to know exactly what this is unless we have 17 games of Joe Burrow in the regular season to understand what all can come about. I mean, look, offensively, there's no problems there. I mean, Chase Brown, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, the skill positions are there to continue to have an explosive offense. Yes, the offensive line's in disrepair. That's something that you're going to have to attack aggressively in the draft. I think free agency, you're going to have to look at it. Hope maybe, you know, you can find something off the scrap heap. You have to drive everything into that offensive line to make sure you get that fixed. And in with the mindset, I think of, you know what, there was a time when the Indianapolis Colts were completely top heavy on offense when it came to cap around Peyton Manning, right? Paid Peyton Manning, paid Marvin Harrison, paid, you know, Reggie Wayne. We should start paying all these guys. And next thing you know, the defense is in disrepair. You had to hit home runs in the draft. I think really that's what Tobin's going to have to do with this draft class, because that's where a lot of that investment's got to go, the offensive line and obviously the entirety of the defense. But Lou Anarumo, that was a loss. We saw it. You know, we saw, I think he did reasonably well in Indianapolis and showed that maybe he was not the problem with the defense there. So, you know, that's an issue on ownership as well, as well as Zach Taylor. So I just think you got to give it a full season in 2026. You hope you get Burrow for the full season, and that ends up being ultimately the referendum. But Frank, you are correct. I mean, it's a Super Bowl that they're still thinking about, and it's you know, Mike Brown, the just the penchant for ownership not to want to pay people who are not in the building.
Look, they thought Lou was the problem. And they're going to fix everything last offseason to be ready and get out of the gate better. And this is a different story this season. We're not going to be 0 for September. And our defense is going to be young and fast. And Al Golden's going to teach. And it's not going to be complicated. And it really didn't happen. And so now I think when you see the dismay on the faces of people like Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow, and Ja'Marr's like, I'm going to Cancun. Everyone says I should go to Cancun. So that's what I'm going to do. Good for you, by the way, Ja'Marr. They don't have answers. And I think that's the thing with the players. Like, they said they like their coaches, but they want to know, when we thought we had it fixed this year, what is going to be different next year? And Mike Brown says, at least from coach and GM perspective, the answer is going to be no. Want to real quick tap the base on Joe Shane. It's not a surprise to me. Is it to either of you guys, Charles, you go first, that Shane is not only leading the coaching search here, but that right now the Giants say he's going to be back?
No, I mean, I think when they fixed or at least got an asset quarterback, then ownership believed that Joe Shane was going to be retained. And if he's going to be retained, I don't know why you would retain a GM and then go, but I'm not going to let you pick the coach. You know, you fix the quarterback spot. We think, you know, you have that moving forward, and there are other skill. There's some, you know, there's good assets at the skill position there. They got a tight end in Theo Johnson. They've got obviously Malik Nabers. They're going to be able to add another high-end asset in this draft. There's pieces there to work with, and I think if Joe Shane stays, you got to let him, you know, choose the coach and try to align it. And if it ultimately doesn't work out, well, that's the path you've chosen.
Frank, yeah, what do you think?
It wasn't that big of a surprise because Shane has, you could see the progress of the roster. There are a lot of young pieces and a lot of exciting players. The only surprise was, again, this whole idea of, well, if you want to attract the best candidates, doing the whole sweep with GM and coach is the way to do it. You know, you saw Jacksonville last year when, all right, to get Liam Cohen, we got to move on this. And they did. And that worked out great for the Jaguars. So that's the only surprise, is that I think there might be some pushback from some candidates of like, Joe Shane, if the Giants lose next year, all of a sudden everything changes because the GM's not probably going to be there anymore. But as far as Joe Shane and doing his job and drafting, well, yeah, you can see the progress with the roster. No question about it.
Sure. Joe Shane, 13-38 is GM. There are people that argue, no, I do think, and you've heard plenty of people, I know both of you have as well, around the league say that Mr. Mara's health, he's battling cancer right now, factors in this as well, that Joe Shane offers stability and he can run this whole thing while Mr. Mara obviously focuses on his health. And, you know, we're sending him the best as he continues that battle. All right, let's get to everything else we saw Week 18. It's hard to boil that down into 5 or 6 minutes. But we hit earlier on the Tyler Loop miss and the fact that Akershire, that field is an absolute mess. We have questions, honestly, about the coaching situation in both Pittsburgh and Baltimore. There's that. There's the whole NFC South three-way tie, which is the most NFC South way to ever determine a champion. Nobody has a winning record. Let's do a three-way tie. I don't know if you guys watched The Mandalorian back in the a couple of years ago. This is the way. Right. This is the way. This is the NFC South way. And as soon as that game ended on Saturday evening, I was in Cincinnati eating dinner. And I said, I guarantee you it's going to be a three-way tie because, Frank, this is the NFC South way.
Absolutely. Usually, you know what? Here it is. Usually I would dunk on a team that's 8-9 going to the playoffs. You don't deserve it. I think the point differential for the Panthers was minus 67 this year. You can watch them. It's clearly not a playoff level team, but for Carolina, celebrate it. This was a big step forward season. However you got there, you have not been to the playoffs, I believe, since 2015 or won a division since 2015, one of the two. It has been a long drought. I believe 5 straight double digit losing seasons. You wanted some hope. You wanted something to be happy about. You backed into it. Fine. I don't care. The Panthers did have some quality wins this year. They did seem to be making progress. So, you know, if it would have been the Buccaneers, I would have had a different tone because the Buccaneers should be better than this. There's no excuse for them to be 8-9. For the Panthers, hey, step forward. Good job. Celebrate it. It's a really nice year for the Carolina Panthers to win this division, no matter how they did it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you at least got some semblance of belief that maybe Bryce Young can be the quarterback we hoped he could be, right? You saw flashes.
Oh, wait, are you totally sold?
No.
You're sold because they have to make a fifth-year option decision this summer.
I think you're sold through the fifth. I think you pick up the fifth-year option in May and you commit to it. I think you saw enough flashes Ted McMillan's amazing. I think he's probably going to end up winning Offensive Rookie of the Year. You know, you got a deep running back position. You could add Jonathan Brooks to that if he can ultimately come back from the knee injury that really took him down, the first 2 years of his career. But I think that, as Frank said, it is a positive. We, by the way, have seen the Carolina Panthers make the playoffs and actually win in the wild card round at 8-9. Well, I mean, good God, Ron Rivera did it. And it was funny. I was kind of mapping out a thumbnail of this game, and the question I'd answer is like, why can Carolina beat the Los Angeles Rams? And I was like, well, they did it. They actually beat this Rams team earlier in this season. They got after
They're
Matt Stafford.
They're double-digit dogs. You realize that.
Yeah. And he committed 3 turnovers. I mean, it was a really bad game for in terms of if you want to point at a bad game that Matt Stafford had this year, that was the bad game. So, you know, there's at least some confidence in knowing that, hey, we've done the David and Goliath thing once. Maybe we can do it again. It's weird to say that in a home game, but you did come in at 8-9. But I'm with Frank. I mean, there are positive signs. You got into the postseason. Now you're the Cardinals of 2024, and you're thinking, okay, next year's got to be the big step. That's my mindset here. You can't do what the Cardinals did coming off of 8-9. You got to take 8-9. It has to be double-digit win season in 2026.
I know I've said this before. I'll say it again. I saw the Panthers for a joint practice. Browns were down there during the preseason, I beg your pardon. And I did not walk away from that joint practice. The game, who cares? Preseason game. But I did not walk away from that joint practice going, oh, yeah, that's a playoff team. Now, got to take into account the division they're playing, and I totally understand that. But I did not go, and they were very bullish on, I don't know, Derek Brown's going to be back, and we signed Bobby Brown, and, you know, it's our prerogative to win. Ha-ha. But I did not see it. I didn't. I sit corrected, and they're in the playoffs, and they get the Rams. The bracket, I mean, you know the bracket by now. Panthers host the Rams. That's the Saturday game, early game. The Bears and the Packers for the third time in 6 blessed weeks. That is the Saturday night game, the best and oldest rivalry in the National Football League. Bills play the Jaguars, Niners play the Eagles, Chargers play the Patriots. That is your Sunday triple header. And then on Monday night, the 5-seed Texans at Aaron Rodgers and the 4-seed Steelers. Hopefully they fix the field by then in what, again, could be the final game in Aaron Rodgers' career and maybe the final game with Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh as people are banging the drum that thing keeps gaining momentum, that thing could be over. By the time we do a show on Tuesday, John Harbaugh may no longer be the head coach of the Ravens. I'm not rooting for that, but the fact is, both Pittsburgh and Baltimore, those are legitimate conversations to be had. And there are, as we wrap this show, still teams that could make moves. Just because you made the playoffs doesn't mean you're going to have the same head coach next year. As we sit here right now, Todd Bowles says he's going to meet with the Glazers later this week. Maybe that's one where that conversation is had later this week. I am going to wager, friendly wager, and I'm not allowed to gamble, recreational purposes only, that there will be another move. I don't know where it is, but I don't think we're done for my money. Anyway, time for one more thing before we go. Remind me who we decided is going first here with this one. Who's doing the one more thing first? Frank's going first. Thank you, Madison.
Today is such a news-filled day with coaching hires and whatnot, and it seems like this game happened a lot longer ago than it did. I didn't want to take a chance to congratulate the Seattle Seahawks, the best team in the NFL this regular season, now two home games away from Super Bowl 60. We talked all season about there's no great team. Well, the Seattle Seahawks have three losses by a combined 9 points. They went 14-3. That defensive effort against the 49ers might have been the best individual defensive effort of the season. Maybe the Texans against Josh Allen, but very, very short list. When you could hold the 49ers to 173 yards, the fewest of any regular season game for Kyle Shanahan as 49ers coach, you are a really good defense. Sam Darnold, 28-6 over the last 2 years, if you want to assign quarterback an individual record. This Seahawks team is legit. They're very, very good. Mike McDonald's had an awesome season. And for a team that came in with the same exact odds to win a division as the Arizona Cardinals before the season started, hats off to the Seattle Seahawks, the best team of football over the 2025 season. Now let's see if they can build on that and win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and Darnold is right. That is as bad a venue to go into as a road team as there is in the NFL, period, full stop. I encourage every fan to go to Seattle once for a road game. What do you got, C-Rob?
Well, we'll go elsewhere in the NFC West, and the NFL's so brutal, man. It's such a brutal. I thought to myself when Jonathan Gannon got fired, I thought, did they not just wish him a happy birthday on their social media account? Like, did this guy get a happy
totally
birthday?
Missed this. Oh, my God.
They did. Hey. They wished him a happy birthday, and then they fired him on the same day. So that's the NFL, folks. That hook is real. It's out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad. It's bad to be fired. He does, however, get a lovely parting gift. A lovely parting gift.
Yes.
He gets majority. He gets his contract paid out here, right? He gets his contract paid out on his birthday. Go ahead.
I don't know what the offset language is, but yeah, I mean, it's certainly a nice thing to walk out the door with.
Yeah, and I do know Arizona is a great state for lack of state income tax. So there's that as well. My one more thing is something that you guys referred to earlier, and that is about the Browns and the rookies. And tip of the cap to Dante over at NFL Research at NFL Network. And really, tip of the cap to those boys all throughout the season. They're always listening to Browns games and sending me stuff during the games. The Browns did something with their rookie class that had never been done since the merger, since 1970. They had a rookie lead them in passing yards, Shedeur Sanders. A rookie lead them in rushing yards, Quinshon Judkins. By the way, I spoke to Quinshon today. He's on the mend. No knee damage. It's Kevin Stefanski said. He is optimistic. He is going to be back soon. Receiving yards, Harold Fannin, rookie led the team as well. Tackles, Carson Schwestinger led the team there,
crazy,
a rookie, and soon to be defensive rookie of the year. Some people wrote back on Twitter and said, wait a minute, Andre Schmidt, he's a rookie. Technically, he's not. He is a first-year player, right? He's been on rosters before, but never in a game. But yes, for all intents and purposes, he is a rookie kicker, although not in the eyes of the NFL. He led the team in scoring, as most teams have their kicker lead in scoring. So yeah, there are players here. Certainly the Browns need more of them. And they also need a new head coach. Gentlemen, a tip of the cap and thank you to you and Madison and Brett and Austin and Stone and everyone else, because, you know, we're all juggling things today. So thank you for sitting in the chair early. Love you both. Delay, nod, nod, proof of life. You okay? Frank,
okay,
nod.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I got to look at the camera. Here's the monitor. Nod. Thank you. Fun times. Thanks, everyone, for listening to and watching Inside Coverage. We are back Tuesday. Maybe there's more coaching news. Maybe not. If not, we'll do a deeper dive into the postseason. I promise. My name is Andrew Siciliano. So long.
Bye.